Tonight we're going to discuss a very important sugya, which has many nafkaminas halacha lamaisa. Kidarkeinu, we're not going to discuss all of the halacha lamaisa conclusions in the sugya. We're more going to focus on the basic sources and the lumdus behind the discussion. But we're going to discuss tonight the concept of tumas kohanim, what the nature of the prohibition for kohanim to become tamei is. And obviously this has nafkaminas in terms of kohanim going on planes specifically which have dead bodies in cargo, you know, planes which go to Eretz Yisrael, planes which fly over cemeteries. How do Kohanim navigate that complicated parsha? We, Baruch Hashem, have three Kohanim on that side over here. You're not a Kohen. Right? What? You're all Tommy. Right, exactly. You're not a Kohen. Not yet. Okay. There's still time. For sure.
The rabbi Spansky is saying that if there's three people in a car, it's considered it's just a robbery.
Yeah.
And there's no tumah.
Right.
So why is a plane ever an issue? There's always more than three people.
No, so it's suffix tumah. It's not that when you have three people, there's no tumah. It's when you have three people and there's a suffix tumah. Rishus harabim is tahor. We're going to discuss that later on. But that's suffix tumah. If you know for sure there's a mace there in the car, then there's no.
When it's
a suffix, yeah, exactly. So that may relate to the, you know, if you're not sure whether there's a body on the plane, maybe there's reason to be makel. If you're not sure whether you're flying over a cemetery, yeah, for sure. But that's only when there's a doubt. If you know for sure that you're flying over a cemetery or there's a body on the plane, that's not a suffix, so you can't say, you know, there's a Rosh Hashanah here. We're going to discuss that, whether that even applies to Kohanim in general. So we'll get to that. If we have time, Mir Tashem, I actually discussed this sugya a little bit with Rabbi Sauer this morning. I was Zocha, he's a Kohen. Yoni Bars pointed that out to me, I didn't know. And he had a fascinating shaila that his grandson had to deal with recently coming from Eretz Yisrael. So Mir Tashem, if we have time, we'll discuss that shaila at the end of the shir. So without further ado, the Gemara on Daf Nun Dalet Amud Beis in Maseches Nazir had the following question. In source one, we know that Chazal made a takana, made a gzera, that Eretz Ha'amim, Chutz La'aretz, is tamei. They said that Kohanim are not allowed to live in Chutz La'aretz. You know, ask them, you know, what the answer to that question is, how they're allowed to live here. But Kohanim are not allowed to live in Chutz La'aretz. Eretz Ha'amim, Chutz La'aretz, is tamei. And the question of the Gemara is, what exactly did Chazal say when they made Eretz Ha'amim tamei? Did they say that the atmosphere, the air of Eretz Ha'amim is tamei? Or were they concerned that the ground is tamei? Meaning, we don't know where any dead bodies are buried. They could be anywhere. So therefore, Kohanim always have to be concerned that they're walking over dirt, which may have a mace that's buried in the dirt. That's the Gemara's question. And the Gemara assumes that the nafkamina is whether when a Kohen goes into Chutz La'aretz, or Nazir, for that matter, the Gemara is really discussing Nazir, goes into Chutz La'aretz, is he Tameh in a full-fledged way, meaning he has to go through the regular Tara process of a person who comes into contact with a mace. You know, you have to do the paraduma, hazah shlishi v'shri, and then go to the mikvah, you're Tameh for 7 days. Or no, it's not so chomer, maybe just go to the mikvah, it's not as stringent as full-fledged tumas mace. That's what the Gemara is discussing. And in the interest of time, we're not going to get into the details of exactly the Shagrataria, but what comes out from the Gemara is the Gemara has a very vague statement where the Gemara seems to imply that the halacha, if a Kohen or a Nazir comes into contact with a Kli, that comes into contact with a mace, yeah, the Kohen or the Nazir is not going to violate their prohibition of becoming Tumah. So again, let's just review the basics of Tumah. We know that the highest level of Tumah is a mace, which is Avi Avos HaTumah. It's the grandfather of Tumas. Anyone who touches a mace becomes an Avatumah. And anyone who touches an Avatumah becomes a Rishon LaTumah. Exactly. So if you have a Kli, let's say you have to keep it simple, you have a wooden Kli which touches a mace. So that Kli becomes a Avatumah. Now if someone else touches the Kli, he becomes a Rishon LaTumah. Yeah? Now, there is a halacha of cheriv harihu kechalo. What's cheriv harihu kechalo? If you have a dead body, and the dead body comes into contact, let's assume this is a major machlokas, exactly which types of kelim apply to this, but let's assume right now that if you have a metal kli that touches a dead body, even though we said beforehand that when you have a kli that touches a dead body, it becomes an avatuma, the metal kli remains an avi avasatuma, the highest level of tuma. The highest level of tuma. That applies to metal klis. So now the question that we're going to deal with, it's going to be a machlokas and tosis. The question that we're going to deal with is whether kohanim are prohibited, and nazirim are prohibited from coming into contact with a kli that was metal that touched the mace. For sure, kohanim can't touch the mace. For sure, nazirim can't touch the mace. And it's clear from the Gemara in Nazir that if you have a wooden kli which touched the mace, became an avatuma, if the nazir or the kohen comes into contact with it, it's not a problem. The question at hand is cheriv harihu kechalo. The metal kli, which has the full status of avi avasatuma, when it touches the kohen, it's really hot in here, right? I'm schwitzing like a dog. What's going on in here? You're cold? Are you really cold? It's like 75 degrees in here, no? I see you going this, then I realize I'm also going this. I'm about to take my jacket off, no joke.
They started the renovation, sorry.
What was that?
They started
the renovations. No, it was hot today also, but it was more comfortable. You got it? You're the West Side guy. You should know how to do this.
I just know somebody else.
And I'm Shabbos. Okay, Lemaisa, so when it comes to cheriv harihu kechalo, which again is the metal kli which touches the mace, so the metal kli has the status of avi avos atuma. So
that's the highest status.
It becomes like the mace, like the mace itself. So the question is, do we say just like the kohen can't touch the mace, or the nazir can't touch the mace, so too he can't touch, let's say, the metal kli, let's call it a sword. Cherev, that's the lashon of the Torah. Cherev haru kachalal. He can't touch the sword which came into contact with the mace. Or do we say, no, the prohibition only applies to the mace itself? That is a major machlokas between Rabbeinu Tam and Reb Chaim Cohen, his student. So if you take a look in source 3, Tosis is bothered by a question. We're not going to get into the details of what exactly Tosis' question, because it's intricate in the Shach Matar of the Gemara. But Rabbeinu Tam makes a comment at the end of the first line. Omer Rabbeinu Tam, Dal karchach lo metuk ma mastis and bekli matchus, de imkein hanazir megaleach de cherev hariu kechala. Rabbeinu Tam assumes that if a nazir or a kohen comes into contact with a metal kli that touched the mace, the nazir has to shave his head because he became tameh. He violated his nazirus, and the kohen violated the prohibition of a kohen becoming tameh if he came into contact with a metal kli that touched the mace. That's the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. And what did Reb Chaim Cohen say to Rabbeinu Tam? Reb Chaim Cohen was obviously a kohen. So he says to Rabbeinu Tam, look at the second line, this is very funny, humorous. V'sholach lo Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen. Reb Chaim Cohen, who was a student of Rabbeinu Tam, said to Rabbeinu Tam, if that's the case, if you're going to tell me that kohanim are prohibited from coming into contact with a metal kli that came into contact with a mace, he says, Eizo bayis asher tivne li. What kind of house are you going to build for me? He's paraphrasing a pasuk in Chumash. What kind of house am I going to live in? The ein nazir e nazir migalech alav who adin the kohen muzar alav the ein lacha bayis shein bashum kli matchus shahaya beol hames. Says Reb Chaim Cohen, every house has a metal kli that at some point in time came into contact with a mace. How is that so? Because he's assuming that if you have a metal kli that was under the same roof as a dead body. Just like we know Tumas Oel applies if a person is under the same roof as a dead body, he becomes Tummy, that's Tumas Oel. So too, he assumes that if you have a metal kli that was under the same roof as a dead body, that metal kli has the status of Cherev Hariu Kechalal, it's the highest level of Tumah. And says Reb Chaim Cohen, every house has some metal kli that at some point in time was under the same roof as a dead body. Why is that true? I assume that the case is because they didn't really have hospitals. You know, at that time, people probably died in their home. So every kli at some point, or many kalim at some point, were under the same roof as a dead body. And if that's the case, Reb Chaim Cohen says, I'm a kohen. how am I ever going to live in a house? How am I ever going to be under the same roof as any metal kli? I have to be concerned that every metal kli at a certain point in history was under the same roof as a mace, and then memela, I can't be under the same roof as that metal kli, because if you're going to tell me that a kohen is prohibited with coming into contact with a metal kli, then I'm not going to be able to live in any house. So Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen argues that he thinks that a Kohen is not prohibited from coming into contact with Cherev HaRikachal. He thinks that the prohibition for a Kohen and a Nazir only applies to coming into contact with the mace itself, not the metal kli.
After the Bais HaMikdash, right? This is when there's no Bais HaMikdash.
Why?
So when there's Bais HaMikdash, the Kohen's prohibition of becoming Tamei is now he invalidates himself from service, right?
Not necessarily. I mean, he can come. There's no prohibition. There's no prohibition for a Kohen to come into contact with the Sheretz, even though that will make him Tamei and he won't be able to do Avoda. It's specifically Tumas Mace. So the question, right? It's specifically Tumas Mace. There are other types of Tumos which will invalidate him from doing the Avoda, and there's no prohibition for the Kohen to become Tamei with respect to those. It's only Tumas Mace.
Nothing to do with Avi Avotum.
It happens to be that Tumas Mace is the Avi Avotum, but the point is that a Kohen cannot come into contact. Yeah. Yeah.
This is just a more general question. Does tum ever wear off? Like, in other words, does it
no.
Have a,
no.
Once it's there forever.
Exactly. You have to go to the mikvah. You go to the mikvah.
But in Tom's time, we wouldn't do that anymore because they didn't care.
Right. Meaning, at a certain point in history, they were more concerned about remaining tahor because, you know, some were eating trumos and maestros, and there was more of concern of...
There was more consequences.
Exactly. Nowadays, we're only concerned about kohanim because they have a prohibition to become tamei regardless of whether they're going to eat something that is kadosh, they're not eating korbanos, they're not going to do avoda, but they have a prohibition separate from the avoda of becoming Tamei Tumas Meis. So now we have a machlokas between Rabbeinu Tam and Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen as to whether a Cohen is prohibited with coming into contact with a metal kli that came into contact with a dead body. So, yeah, what's your question?
His argument was based on the fact that all metal is under the
That is a major machlokas rishonim, whether the concept of tumas ohel applies to cherev harihu kechalal. Meaning, maybe the concept of tumas ohel only applies if you're under the same roof as a dead body itself. But maybe, even though we say that the cherev harihu kechalal, the metal kli that comes into contact with the mace, gets the full status of the mace, but perhaps if a person is under the same roof as that metal kli, we don't invoke the idea of tumas ohel. Maybe a kohen is allowed to be under the same roof as a kli, which came into contact with the mace, even though he can't be under the same roof as the mace itself. Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen is assuming that halach applies. Very good. But what is the nature of this machlokas between Rabbeinu Tam and Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen of whether a kohen is allowed to touch a cheriv harihu kechalal? At first glance, Rabbeinu Tam makes a lot of sense, right? Just like a Kohen can't become Tameh by coming into contact with a mace, so too he shouldn't be able to come into contact with a cherev, a metal kli, which touched the mace, because we assume that the metal kli has the same level of Tumah as the mace itself. It's the Avi Avos HaTumah. So just like the Kohen can't touch the mace itself, so too he shouldn't be able to touch the metal kli which touched the mace. What is the machlokas? So we're going to pose the following chakira, two ways to understand the nature of the prohibition of a Kohen to become Tamei, and then we're going to show how this is really a major machlokas in other fascinating shilas. We were assuming up until now that the prohibition of a Kohen to come into contact with a mace is that he can't become Tamei Tumas Mace. The reason he can't touch the mace or be under the same roof as the mace is because if that happens, he is becoming Tamei Tumas Mace, right? He can't be Metamei himself. He can't let himself become Tamei Tumas Mace. That is the prohibition. That's what we were assuming up until now. And then Rabbeinu Tam makes a lot of sense. Rabbeinu Tam argues, just like he can't become Tamei by touching the mace, so too he can't become Tamei by touching the metal kli that touched the mace. However, maybe that's not the way to understand Tumas Kohen, the prohibition for a Kohen to become Tamei, and also for a Nazir. Maybe the prohibition is actually just that he cannot come close to a mace. It happens to be that when a person comes close to a mace, either by touching the mace or being under the same roof as a mace, he becomes tamei. But what the Torah is really concerned about, what the Torah prohibits for the Kohen, is that he should not come close to a dead body. How do we determine whether he's close to a dead body? So now we have halachos that dictate in Tumah how Tumah is transferred. So if he touches the mace, that's considered coming close to the body. If he's under the same roof as a mace, that's considered coming close to the dead body. But the prohibition is not necessarily for him to become Tomei Tumas Mace. Rather, it's to come close, lehiskariv el mace, to come close to a mace. If that's the case, then Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen makes a lot of sense. Even if a Kohen, it's true, when the Kohen touches the metal kli that touched the mace, he's going to become Tomei Tumas Mace, but you can't say that he came close to the mace. This kli touched the mace 10 years ago. The mace is long gone. This kli is nowhere close to the mace. So now when the Kohen touches the kli that touched the mace, it's true that he's becoming tamei, but maybe the Torah's real concern for a Kohen is not that he should become, that he shouldn't become tamei. Rather, the concern is that he should not become close to a mace. And perhaps that's Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen's argument, that even if the Kohen is going to become tamei, but that doesn't matter. What the Torah really was concerned about is the Kohen should not become close to a mace. And perhaps that's the machlokas between Rabbeinu Tam on the one hand and Rabbeinu Chaim Cohen on the other hand. So what we're going to do right now is we're going to go through a bunch of sources which seem to indicate one way or the other whether the way to properly understand that the prohibition for a Kohen to become Tamei is to become Tamei, literally to become Tamei with Tumas Mace, or is it a prohibition to come close to the mace, but not really the concern about being Tamei. So like we said beforehand, you look concerned about something. Okay. So like we said beforehand, a Kohen is not allowed to be under the same roof as a dead body, right? And that's the concept of Tumas Ohel. Of Tumas Ohel. Right? Makes sense? That's what the Shulchan Aruch says in Source 4. Aser l'kohen l'kanis tachas olal shemeis tachtov, afilu hu gadol harbe. Even if you have a large roof, a large house, a large building, if the Kohen and the mace are under the same roof, it's prohibited for the Kohen to go under that roof. So the Shach over there, commenting on the Shulchan Aruch, quotes from the Sefer Rokeach. The Rokeach was one of the Rishonim. He quotes the following fascinating Shaila. Let's say you have an Ashes Kohen who is pregnant. So we know that the halacha of Tumas Kohenim only applies to males. It does not apply to females. A woman who is a Bas Kohen, or if she's married to a Kohen, she does not have the same prohibitions of becoming Tamei Tumas Mace. So let's say you have an Ashes Kohen who is Milberet. She's pregnant with the child of a Kohen. And we're not sure whether the child is a boy or a girl. Is that woman now allowed to go to a cemetery? Or is she allowed to go under the same roof as a mace? So herself, there's no problem. You know, even if she's a Bas Kohen, she's allowed to become Tamei. There's no Shaila. And if we knew for sure that the baby was a female, there would also be no problem. But the problem is, we're not sure whether the child is a male, and therefore we shouldn't allow even a child, for whatever reason, we assume that we're not allowed to facilitate Kohanim or children to become Tamei. So if the child is a Zohar, is a male, she wouldn't be able to go under the roof. She wouldn't be able to go to the cemetery. But if the child is a female, then there would be no problem.
We have a thing where somebody swallows something.
Excellent. Excellent. Very good. Tumablua. So we're about to discuss that in a second. So let's take a look at the Shach. And you'll take a look in Source 5. Kasar Okech. Eishes Kohen Shemil Beres. Muteres Likanis Ba'ol Hameis. So the Rokeach says that if you have an Ashes Kohen who is pregnant, she's allowed to go under the same roof as a mace. Why? Disfek Sfekahu. It's a double suffik. Usually in halacha, when you have one suffik for an Isser Daraisa, we say suffik Daraisa L'chumra, right? Whenever you have a doubt in when it comes to a biblical prohibition, we always go L'chumra. But if you have a double doubt, maybe this is an Asr. And even if it's Asr, maybe the Metzias is wrong. However, you can, you know, conjure up your Svek Sveka, your double doubt. Svek Sveka is always Mutter. That's a big discussion. We're not going to get into the the lumpness behind Specs Faker right now. But says the Rokeach, an Ashes Cohen was pregnant is allowed to go under an Olam Ace because it's a Specs Faker. It's a double doubt. What's the double doubt? Shema Nefilhu. Maybe the child is not a viable fetus. Maybe the child is not going to be born and live out his life. Oh, Shema Nekevahu. And even if the child is going to be born and live out his life, maybe it's not a he. Maybe it's a she. And if it's a she, if it's a Nekeva, there's no prohibition for the child to become tummy. So since it's a Svek Sveika, it's a double doubt, says the Rokeach, quoted by the Shach, there's no problem for a pregnant woman who is married to a Kohen to go into a Beis HaKfaros or to go under an Ohel that has a mace there. Makes sense? So far, so good. Now, the Magen Avraham asks on the Rokeach. The Magen Avraham is in Hilchos Shabbos. We're not going to get into why this is a discussion in Hilchos Shabbos. But the Magen Avraham in Source 6 asks the following question related to what Yechiel just pointed out. Why did the Rokeach have to say that it's mutter because of a Svek Sveka? There's a much simpler reason to allow an Ashes Kohen who's Muberes, who's pregnant, to go into a cemetery, to go under the same roof as a mace. There's a concept of Tumah Blua or Tahara Blua, that anything that's absorbed, anything that's inside of the belly of an animal or a woman for that matter, cannot become tameh. If it's tameh, it can't transfer tumah, and if it's tahor, it can't become tameh. It's called tumah blua or tahor blua, if it's absorbed. If it's absorbed, it can't become tameh. So if that's the case, asks the Magen Avraham, there's a much simpler reason that an Ashes Kohen who is pregnant, she should be allowed to go to a Beis HaKfaros, she should be allowed to go under the Olam Ace, because even if the child... Even if we know for sure that the child is a male, she should be allowed to go there. Because the child is not going to become tameh because the child is absorbed in his mother. He's in his mother's belly. And even if for sure it's a male Kohen and we shouldn't allow him to become tameh, he's not going to become tameh regardless at that point because he is Tahara Blua. He's not going to become tameh. So asks the Magen Avraham on the Rokeach, quoted by the Shach, why did he have to say that it's mutter because of a Svek Sveka? There's a much simpler reason to be matir, because he's not going to become tamei. Forget the sveikos. Even if we know for sure that it's a male, and we know for sure that it's a viable fetus, nevertheless it should be mutter, because the child is not going to become tamei. That's the Magen Avraham's question on the Shach. So what's the answer?
He's concerned about becoming closer to the male.
So obviously what the Magen Avraham, on the one hand, and the Shach and the Rokeach seem to be arguing about is what's the nature of the prohibition of the Kohen to become Tamei. Is the concern of the Torah that the Kohen shouldn't actually become Tamei? Or is the concern that the Kohen should not come close to a mace? If you assume that the concern is that the Kohen shouldn't become Tamei, so then I understand the Magen Avraham's argument. As long as the child is not going to become Tamei, even if we know for sure that it's a male, and even if we know for sure that it's a viable fetus, there should be no prohibition for the woman who is pregnant to go into the Beis HaKfaros, because the child is not going to become Tamei. That's what the Magen Avraham is assuming, that the whole prohibition for a Kohen to become Tamei is that he shouldn't be Tamei. But if he's not going to be Tamei, there's no problem for him to come close to a mace. But if you assume that the whole prohibition for a Kohen to become Tamei is not to be Tamei, rather it's to come close to a mace, then we understand why the Shach and the Rokeach needed to allow it based on a Svek Sveka. Because even if it's true that there's no concern of the child becoming Tamei, but there's a concern that if the child is under the same roof or in the Beis HaKfaros, they're coming close to the mace. And if they're coming close to the mace, regardless of whether the child will actually become tamei, there's still a prohibition to allow the child to come close to a mace. That's why the Shach and the Rokeach needed to say that it's mutter because of a svek sveka, because of a double doubt. Because even if it's true, the child's not actually going to become tamei, but still, if it's a male kohen, it's usher for him to come close to the mace. So this machlokus between the Magen Avraham on the one hand and the Shach and the Rokeach on the other hand seems to depend on how you understand the prohibition of Tumas Kohanim. Right? Again, the Magen Avraham assumes, obviously, that the prohibition of Tumas Kohanim is to not become Tamei. So he says that if the child is in his mother's belly, he's not going to become tummy regardless. So even if we did an ultrasound and we determined that the child is a zachar and the child is for sure going to live out mea ve'esrim, there's no problem because the child is not going to become tummy. Right? That's the Magen Avraham. But the Shach and the Rokeach seem to be assuming, no, we don't care about the child actually becoming tummy. We care about the child coming close to a mace. So if we did an ultrasound and we determined for sure that the child was a zachar, the child was a male, and we determined and we know for sure that the child is going to live on Me'av Esrim, so according to the Shach and the Rokeach, we would never allow the child, the woman. What was that? What do you mean we just need one? Because it'd be one suffix. Right. But I'm just, yeah. But, yeah. So we would, so that's why the Rokeach and the Shach have to come onto the Svek Sveka. They need to say that there's a double doubt here to allow the woman who is pregnant to go into the Beis HaKvaros under the ohel of that the mace is there. Because even if technically speaking they're not going to become tamei, they're coming close to the mace.
So everything's about proximity in that argument. Right?
Exactly. But proximity is determined not by feet and inches, but in terms of halacha categories. So touching is a halacha category, or being under the same roof is a halacha category. That's considered coming close to the mace. It happens to be that there's a correlation between that and actually becoming tamei, but the question is, what's the real concern? Is the real concern actually becoming tamei, or is it the coming close through the touching or being under the same roof? Exactly. Oh, gewaldig. Now, we had a Gemara a few weeks ago. The Gemara had a Shaila, had a Machlokas, whether a Kohen is allowed to come into contact with a Gosis. What's a Gosis? Someone who's about to die, right. So it's a discussion in Shulchan Aruch exactly how long, you know, everyone's about to die. Everyone's going to die eventually. So, you know, we don't assume everyone is a Gosis. So I think in Shulchan Aruch it says that if we assume that the person is going to die within 3 days, if the person's not going to live out the next 3 days, they have the status of a Gosis. So the question is a Kohen allowed to come into contact with the Gosis? So you may say, why wouldn't he be able to come back? The Gosis is still living, right? We don't assume that the Gosis is dead. So why wouldn't the Kohen be able to come into contact with the Gosis? But nevertheless, it was a machlokas in the Gemara on Daf Mem Gimel Meral. If you take a look in Source 7, the Gemara said, Tanur Ban Lahechalo, Ad Shosh Yamos, that until the person actually dies, Rabbi Yomer, Bemosam Yitma Ad Shosh Yamos. So the Gemara says, what's the machlokas between two sudrashos? There's a machlokas. So the Gemara ends up saying, according to one opinion at least, that the machlokas between these two drashos is whether a Kohen is allowed to come into contact with a Goses. Okay, fine. Now, it's a major machlokas in Tosis over there, how we should paskin. Two opinions of the Gemara, and it's a discussion in Tosis whether we should paskin, fascinating, that a Kohen, whether a Kohen is permitted to come into contact with a Goses, or is a Kohen prohibited to come into contact with a Goses. And in Shulchan Aruch, we are actually machmir that a Kohen, if you take a look in Source 9, Aval Goses, Mishan Nishchutu Bo Bo Simanim, O Patsua Pison Harbi, if a person has tremendous wounds, Eina Metamin, they're still alive, so they don't transmit Tumah. Even though a Goses does not transmit Tumah, the Shulchan Aruch paskins, like the opinion in the Gemara and the opinion in Tosis, that a Kohen cannot be under the same roof as a Goses. The same for a Nazir. Yes, we're assuming that. Yeah. So that Gemara was assuming, obviously, that a ghost is his mother. Right. That a ghost is his mother. Exactly. Yes. So, but it's a machlokas in the Gemara over here. And the Shulchan Aruch paskins that you should be machmir that a kohen, even though the goseis does not transmit tumah, nevertheless a kohen or a nazir should be machmir not to come into contact with the goseis. So now the question is, wait a second, if the goseis does not transmit tumah, so what exactly is the concern for a kohen to come into contact with a goseis? There's no tumas mace there, so why can't the kohen? So you may say it's a concern, you know, if you can die at any moment, so you may be stuck with a dead body, but it doesn't sound that way. It sounds like inherently there's a prohibition for the Kohen to come into contact with the Goses. So the Achronim explained that the reason the Shulchan Aruch is machmir, and the reason there is a sheet in the Gemara that a Kohen can't come into contact with the Goses is because perhaps the prohibition for a Kohen to become Tamei is not that he can't become Tamei, rather it's that he can't come close to a mace. And even though it's true that the Goseis is still alive, he's not a mace, he's not transmitting Tuma, but on a certain level, he is close to dying. And for the Kohen to come into contact with the Goseis, it's ki'ilu, he's coming close to the dead body. He's being miskariv el hames. He's coming close to a person who's almost there, who's almost dead. That's what the Gemara means to say from the drasha, that lehechalo afilu Goseis, is because on a certain level, the Goseis is karov to die. He's almost dying. So for a Kohen to come into contact with the Goseis, even though technically speaking, he's not going to become Tamei, but nevertheless, he's coming close to Mace. And therefore, that's the basis for the prohibition for the Kohen to come into contact with a Goseis. Yeah.
This was supposed to replicate what we were just doing, though, as far as with the kid.
Right? Exactly, exactly. These two... Exactly, exactly. So this Chakira, which we were... posing the two ways of understanding Tumas Kohanim, is it a prohibition to become Tamei or a prohibition to come close to Mace? We said then one nafkamina was what we started with, Cherev Harikachalal, whether there's a prohibition to come into contact with the metal kli that came into contact with the dead body. We suggest that depends on the two ways to understand the prohibition for a Kohen to become Tamei, right? And then we suggested the machlokas between the Magen Avram and the Shach of whether it's mutter for the pregnant woman to go into the Beis HaKfar was based on Tuma Blua or based on the Sfek Sveika, depends on this question of whether the prohibition is to become Tamei or to come close to a mace. And perhaps this machlokas in the Gemara and a Shaila in Shulchan Aruch of whether a Kohen is allowed to touch or be under the same roof as a Goseis also depends on the Shaila. Okay, two more potential nafkaminas. The Pischei Tshuva in Hilchos Tumas Kohanim has a very, very interesting discussion. Let's say you have ashes of a body. I guess this is probably very relevant going to certain...
like a cremation?
Yeah. So certain concentration camps have like piles of ashes. One of them, I forget which one, has a big pile of ashes in the middle of them. Do I remember which one? Maybe Treblinka. I don't remember which one. But the question is a Kohen allowed to come into contact with ashes from cremation? So on the one hand, it's clear, and if you go through the Mishnayos and Olos, that the ashes of a mace are not metame, right? We have all these complicated Gemaras that we've been discussing with the bones and the netzel and the different things, but ashes are not metame, tumas mace. Yeah, but not ashes. Ashes gets burned. Yeah, so if it's ashes, it's not metame. So it's a machlokas achronim whether a Kohen is allowed to come into contact with these ashes, even though it's for sure true that the ashes are not going to transmit tuma. The Pischei Tshuva quotes a machlokas between the Yaivitz, which is Rabbi Yaakov Emden. Shailas Yav is Rabbi Yaakov Ben Svi, the famous Rabbi Yaakov Emden. And the Sefer, I think it's called Lechem Hapanim. I'm not sure who that was. But it's a machlokas achronim, whether a Kohen is allowed to come into contact with these ashes. So what does the question depend on?
Whether the ashes are...
Let's say everyone assumes that the ashes don't transmit Tumah.
Okay.
So what does the question depend on? Say it. Say it.
Close.
Ah, Exactly. It depends on l'chora. It depends on this question. If you assume that the prohibition of tumas kohanim is to become tameh, so then why can't the kohen come into contact with the ashes? The ashes are not going to transmit any tumah. So why wouldn't the kohen be able to come into contact with the ashes? There's going to be no transference of tumah. So let the kohen touch the ashes. But if you assume that the prohibition is not to become tummy necessarily, it's to come close to a mace, so perhaps the ashes, on a certain level, are still a representation of the mace. It's still it's coming from the mace. So perhaps that's why a kohen wouldn't be able to come into contact with the ashes of a mace, even if he's not going to become tummy, because the prohibition is not necessarily to become tummy. The prohibition is to come close to a mace. That perhaps is the explanation, the nekuda samachlokas, the point that the Achronim are arguing about in terms of whether a kohen is allowed to come into contact with the ashes. Okay, one more. Anyone have the time?
9:22.
Okay. So now we'll discuss one more shaila, and then
Good question.
Yeah.
The exception for the Kohanim, the Krogan, that they're allowed to become Tameh for, do they still become Tameh when they come close to their Karuv?
Yes, they do. They do. There's a mitzvah, we spoke about that last week, there's a mitzvah for them to become Tameh.
A mitzvah for them.
But they still become Tameh. It's not that they don't become Tameh.
Of what Isser is being removed for them? Is it because they're allowed to become, allowed to go close to the dead person?
But they're also allowed to become Tameh. Either way, no matter how you understand it, we're permitting them to come close and become tamei to fulfill the mitzvah of lo yitama.
As far as the examples, whether it's the just becoming tamei or the proximity, the closeness, but one is enveloped in the other. In other words, if the concern's about becoming tamei, then aren't we then inferring that of course the person was close as well? In other words, you could assume that
exactly.
There's not a tumma problem, it's a proximity problem.
Exactly. We're giving examples where, because of a technicality, there's no tumma transference. You're still coming close.
You're still coming
close. The body, the child is in his mother's womb. He's coming as close as his mother, yet he's not going to become tame, or the ashes. You're coming close to the body, so to speak, but you're not. So we've bifurcated the two cases, in terms of coming close and no tumah being transferred.
By virtue of if the kohen did become tamei, then of course they were too close.
For sure. That's what I was saying. The way to determine proximity is based on the halacha categories of, touching under the same roof.
In many places in Gemara, they talk about these scenarios where you're carried in a box. Again, if it's an issue coming close to the mace, then why does that scenario even... Why is that a hadamina?
Because there still is tumas ohel, right? If a person is on top of a dead body, we assume that the body's tumma goes up.
I'm saying that if it was about becoming close, not becoming tummy, just becoming close, then you wouldn't even come on to this scenario.
Oh, so very good. So basically, everything that I'm quoting is from a tshuva that Rav Shechter writes in one of his sarim in Big Vayatzon, where he actually discusses this. Is very interesting. I'm sure many of us use a Wayu Torah, and you've noticed, I'm sure, that it's donated by Marcos and Dina Katz, right? Marcos and Dina Katz. So it's actually the Rav Shechter's kolo in Wayu is also named the Katz kolo, after this guy, Marcos Katz. He's from, not you, but he is a Kohen, Katz, he is a Kohen. He was a Kohen, I think he was Nifter. But he, apparently, this is the story, he would travel from Mexico, I think, this is what Rabbi Steinmetz was telling me, he would travel from Mexico to YU, and at one time he was traveling from Mexico to YU on an airplane, and Rav Shechter thought that it wasn't so posh that, in terms of the problem of flying over cemeteries, which we'll discuss in a moment. So Rav Shechter actually gave a shiur where he discussed whether it was permitted or usher for this Marcos Katz, who was giving millions of dollars to YU, for him to continue flying on the planes and whatever. So Rav Shechter gave a shiur about it, and he wrote it up as a tshuva in one of his svarim. So a lot of what I'm quoting from now is from that tshuva. So Rav Schechter assumes what Yoni was just saying, that if you assume that the prohibition for Kohanim is not necessarily to become Tamei, but it's to come close to a mace, so then at a certain point, even though technically speaking, we assume that the Tum of a mace goes up until Shemayim, but if you're on a plane where the plane is tens of thousands of feet above the mace itself, above the cemetery, even if technically speaking the Kohen is somehow going to become Tame, nevertheless you can't say that he's coming close to the mace. At a certain point, come on, you have to give me a break, he's not coming close to the mace. The Gemara, oh well, with the case of Shida, Teva, Migdal, when the person is going across the basic pharos, we assume he's not, you know, 35,000 feet in the air. The Gemara is talking about a case where he's probably just, you know, whatever the case is, they're pushing him on a cart, he's just above the cemetery. They're carrying him in some box. So there, we assume that he's coming close to the, you know, he's coming close to the body, to the Beis HaKfaros. So that would be a prohibition, even if you assume that the nature of the Isser is to come close to the mace. No, because it's an Ohel Zarek. An Ohel Zarek, if it's a moving Ohel, it's not Mafsik B'fnei HaTumah.
If someone's holding it, it's not Zarek. It's only this name thrown to the
ground. If they're moving also, it's considered Zarek. No, I forget.
Because if you're both moving, then you're not moving relative to the Ohel.
Is that what the Gemara says? I forget. That's what the Gemara says? Okay, I forget. So let's say it's moving on its own, like an airplane's moving on its own.
Right. That's why the airplane doesn't work, but a car does work.
Because
attached to the ground.
Uh-huh. Okay, interesting.
But that's why, I think that's what your question was, that why should that work? Because your proximity is still proximity, even though you're protected. But again, if it's a halachic proximity, it's now...
Right. Good question. I'm not sure.
But again, if it's a halachic proximity, so then... You know, again, if there was a brick wall in between the two of us, we could be sitting very close to each other, but we're not in proximity to each other.
Right.
There's a wall there. So
right. Right. Good question. I'm not sure. So just in the interest of time, let's just discuss one more interesting shaila. So you brought it up beforehand. Yechiel brought it up beforehand. There's a concept of Suffolk Toma B'Shus Arabim. Suffolk Toma B'Shus Arabim is that whenever you have a doubt as to whether there's Tuma in the vicinity, if it's a B'Shus Arabim, which is defined in this, not as 600,000, but three people, if there are three people around, then there's a doubt as to whether there's Tuma here, and you're not sure whether you came into contact with any Tuma, we assume Suffolk Toma B'Shus Arabim is Tahor. We learn that from Sota, without getting into the details of how we learn that. That's the concept of Suffolk Toma B'Shus Arabim is Tahor. So the Minchas Chinuch has a fascinating Shaila. Let's say a Kohen has to go on a certain path, which is considered B'Shus Arabim, but there's a doubt as to whether there's Tumah there. So we know that Suffolk Tumah B'Shus Arabim is Tahor. If he would walk through that path, he would not be Tumah in any doubt. Suffolk Tumah B'Shus Arabim is Tahor, he would not become Tumah. However, the Minchas Chinuch suggests that perhaps, even though Suffolk Tumah B'Shus Arabim is Tahor, maybe the Kohen would still be prohibited to go into that area which has a Suffolk Tumah, even though he would be Tahor. Why? So that Minchas Chinuch says, because perhaps the Isser, the Suffolk Toma B'Shus Arabim is a question of whether the person is going to be Tameh or Tahor. But the Kohen still has a prohibition. He doesn't say it like this, but there's one way to explain what the Minchas Chinuch is saying, is that he still has a prohibition to become close to the mace. So there's a Suffolk of whether he's going to come close to the mace, we should invoke Suffolk Daraisa L'Chumra. Even though it's true with respect to the status of Tumah V'Tahara, he will be Tahor, but in terms of his prohibition of coming close to the mace, he has to be Machmir, because Suffolk Tumah B'Shus Arabim, the Kohen would not be allowed to go into that area which has a Suffolk Tumah. So this is a major discussion. There's so much more to say, and I didn't get to Rabbi Sauer Shaila, but, you know, only so much time. Yeah, very, very quickly.